Thanks for tuning in to the Loser Kid Pinball Podcast. We're on episode 135. I'm Josh Roop. With me, as always, my co-captain,
Scott Larson.
And I can't believe I messed that up last week.
Yeah, it's okay. Last episode. You know, it's all good. Hey, but don't you have a game coming here, Josh?
I just got the call from FedEx this morning, anywhere from 12 to 4 at my house on Monday. So I'm excited. Jaws Premium bought it from Flipping Out. Hey, if you guys ever buy from Flipping Out, tell Zach to stuff one of these shirts. If you're on YouTube, you can have him tell him, I want a Flipping Out shirt, and he will put one in the box.
No, I have mine upstairs. I should have put it on for tonight. You're representing. I feel bad.
No, I'm not going to lie. This is like my first time representing Flipping Out on the stream, on the video.
Well, I do wear the shirt. I just, I have a lot of pinball shirts.
My wife actually wears this shirt a lot more than I do. She steals it all the time. So
she represents Flipping Out.
And honestly, she's better looking than me, so people are going to look at that shirt a lot more on her than on me.
It's probably true.
But, but yeah, Jaws, I'm excited. And
it's the premium. You got the premium?
It is the premium. Yes. Okay. So
why did you choose the premium?
So I played the pro, and don't get me wrong, the pro is a good game. It's a fun game. But I played the premium, and it just felt next level. It made the premium or the pro feel like it was
like a location game?
Yeah, like a location game. Something about, you know, I thought it would be kind of silly, the shark coming out, and like it's only like a one hit wonder, right? Like no pun intended or whatever. But no, that shark adds some depth, adds some strategy there. It's really cool, and it's I like the expansion of rules that Keith is doing, and it feels more akin to a Godzilla rule set than anything else he's done. And so I like the thing I really like, I don't know if anyone out there has played Jaws Premium yet, but I really like, well, it's on the Pro 2, the bounty hunts. So you can start a bounty hunt and it's playing in the background. So it's like, get so many pop bumpers, get so many spinner hits, you know, get so many ramps.
Yeah. And you can remind everybody who haven't played it, what do the bounties do?
So the bounties give rewards and they say on the screen what they are, but you can kind of, like if you complete a bounty, you get like 40 million points, depending on the difficulty of the bounty you go for.
Okay.
But you're going after sharks. Sure. And so it's cool that you can have that running while you're doing a mode or you're playing a multi-ball, or it's something that I usually go for the bounty hunts first to get them going. So they're playing around in the background while I'm playing the rest of the game, essentially. So if you haven't played a Jaws, I highly recommend it. I'm seeing someone was saying that Jaws is nowhere near what Godzilla is. And I think it's hard to compare because it's two different layouts. Like we're going for different concepts and stuff like that. I still think the genius is there. I feel like we kind of get this weird, I don't know if it's the community lately or what, but it feels like a lot of people want to hate pinball or hate what it's become. And I don't get it.
It's easier to channel negative energy. The bottom True. Line, it happens every time a game comes out. It tends to be, you know, if you're into statistics, it's a bimodal distribution where people are either all in or all out.
Yeah.
Like there are very few like middle of the ground things. And I would say I have played Josh. I have played Jaws. I have not played Josh on Jaws, but I have played Jaws. I did play the pro though. I didn't have a chance to play the premium, and I thought it was fun. It was one of those things where I'm like, you know what? This game could definitely grow on me. I didn't love it as in like best game ever, but to be fair, I didn't feel that way about Godzilla or even Medieval Madness the first time I played those.
Yeah.
It takes a while to say, okay, what is the last ability? And that's what makes it a great game.
And I think this game has a lot of last ability. I feel something special when I was playing the premium, and I just had a smile on my face. It felt fun. And so, and here's the other problem too, right? Like there's how many people in this hobby? There's tens, hundreds of thousands of people,
right?
Because there's five dudes complaining on Pinside or complaining on Facebook. It's the whole squeaky wheel situation. Based off the numbers of who listened to Keith, I mean, we had over 8,000 listens on that episode.
Yeah.
So people are excited for this, and it's definitely moving units. Like the other games that are coming into distributors are setting, while Jaws just had its second run of Pro and Premium, And I don't know of many that are sitting in stock. Maybe the pros, but the premiums, all the distributors I talked to said they're literally coming in the door and shipping out to. Yeah. So it's a great game. If you haven't played it, find one. And especially now that there's more premiums out there, find a person and hit them up. Say, hey, I want to come play the game.
Okay. And if you want to order it, call Zach and Nicole at Flipping Out Pinball. They've definitely helped us out. Now, I'm going to go a little bit out of order. I know we have our notes, but I want to, since we're already talking about Jaws,
yes,
I want to jump into the modding of Jaws. So,
oh, yes.
The
oh,
one thing goodness. I do want to talk about, the Stumbler mod, that it was announced. And yes. So if you're unfamiliar with Stumbler, great guy.
I'm like, you've been under a rock.
Well, okay. If you're listening to us, then you have to be at least familiar with the mods. So he released a buoy mod, which looks really great. And he's known. I would say he burst onto the scene with the Tokyo Neon sign mod for Godzilla.
Yes.
Now
yes.
He also has a couple other things for Godzilla. He has the Lolly UFO mod for Godzilla, the subway building for Godzilla, and the noodle bar. Now, these are high end mods.
Yes.
This is not some person printing them out on a 3D printer. These are high end mods, and you are paying a premium for them.
Yes.
But they look amazing. So if amazing. You haven't seen it, go and look at the Jaws Buoy of Death mod. And Josh, what do you think about this mod? Is this something that you're interested in putting in your game?
Okay, so here, this is how I feel about mods. I feel like they're unnecessary for pinball machines. I feel like they're eye candy, right? Like,
yeah. Okay. Okay. Unnecessary or not essential? I would frame it as non-essential, but go ahead.
They're non-essential. I am not much of a mod believer. All the games behind me, excluding Godzilla, don't look at it. They don't have mods. I've had World Cup Soccer for almost a decade now.
Okay.
I've never modded the game. I don't see really a point. I get the bling, yada, yada. Stumbler has made me a believer in mods. He is next level. Like the man is insane when it comes to mods. I have the Tokyo sign mod. Mm-hmm. I have the lollipop ramp, or not lollipop, noodle bar mod. Mm-hmm. And I'm on order for, it's called the subway mod, but it's the other building on the opposite side. Yeah. So it's
subway building mod. So basically Godzilla has four possible mods, which by the way, these aren't cheap. The Godzilla, the Lolly UFO mod is $177. The Tokyo Neon sign is $228. The subway building is $304.
And the buoy death is $295.
Looking at $1,000 in mod to make it look very pretty, by the way. You are making it look very pretty.
Very pretty. And honestly, I feel like it elevates the looks of this game. I know that sounds stupid because I'm like, I don't hate mods, but you know, looking at Stumbler stuff, and I agree with you. I feel like Stumbler's he was on the scene, but when the Tokyo sign came out, it was like, this man's serious.
Yeah.
And then when I received it and I installed it, the craftsmanship, even the even down to the packaging, like the man is just meticulous. It was packaged well. It looked great. And so I'm not gonna lie, I'm in on a Buoy of Death mod.
Okay.
If you haven't seen this, so on Jurassic Park, on Jaws, the lower reel, I'd never noticed this, but there's a giant piece of plastic that goes around the back of that.
Sure.
And I was like, because when I saw the buoy mod, you replace that plastic and it looks like waves, and then this buoy is actually floating. It rocks back and forth like it's in water. And at the top of the buoy is a DMD, and it will tell you like encounter or multi-ball, or it actually tells you what's going on in the game, which is amazing to me. Like this is holy crap. And my concern was maybe it's going to block some of the view or whatnot, but really back behind that reel, there's not really much to see. There is the shack for Quint's shack, but it's not, I was nervous he'd be blocking shots.
Right.
It doesn't look like it's doing that. Like I said before, it's $295. Honestly, I would prefer this over a topper, but we're comparing a $300
well thing okay to like a $2,000 or most definitely be a minimum of $1,000
probably. And so my point being is like I don't really buy mods. I feel like some of them are very cheesy. I feel like some of them are just cake toppers. Mm-hmm. But
well, that, I feel that, like that's when what Toy Story. I know they're not cake topper mods, but you have to admit when you first saw the Toy Story stuff, that's where your mind went.
But I feel like Stumbler has made such a professional product that when I put it in my game, it was meant to be in my game, right? Like I know I've talked about this and I feel bad if the gentleman's listening, but when I bought my very first pinball machine, Amazing Spider-Man, I bought a pinball machine at the same time for a friend. He's like, if you're going there, pick me up one. So I go to this other guy's house and he had taken AstroTurf the whole apron to his no good gophers. And then he had taken like a cake topper golf cart and stuck it back in the back. Like he just, when you looked at it, you knew it wasn't meant to be in the game.
Right.
When I look at Stumbler mods, they do. My game just quacked. I was like, what was that noise? Now I'm seeing it behind me. So Foo Fighters.
Is it updating?
Yeah, it's updating.
It's updating. Hey, Insider Connected, update your games while you podcast, kids.
You know it. So if you hear more, I'm pulling a Tom here. Yeah. Thanks, Tom from Triple Drain. But yes, sorry, I've talked so much, but I am a firm believer in these mods. If you haven't checked these out, and the list opened like 2 days ago or 3 days ago, I mean, it hasn't been that long, and it's like 300-400 people deep. It's crazy.
Right. It's not super fast. You're right. I am looking at, so I did pull up the playfield pictures because I wanted to double check exactly where it goes in the game. So if you look at it, it actually, there's kind of this, it looks like a rocky burr, like a shore. I don't live by the ocean. I don't know how to, like, it's one of those wave break things where they dump a whole bunch of water in, rocks in so the waves can, I've been drinking.
They dump a whole bunch of water in the ocean?
It's this Sal Pellegrino Zero Blood Orange. So okay. I don't know. Maybe maybe the buzz is going to me. But it's like those wave breaks. I think that's what they're called. And then it just has some, it's a plastic. I mean, what else are you going to say, right?
Yeah.
So this, I wonder, I bet that the lights in the mod are probably synced with the lights under the play field for the shark.
Yeah.
You know, when you start chumming the water.
Yep.
I would bet that that's going to be synced, synchronized, I guess. Yes. Because that was surprisingly cool when I played it in person, having them, cause you had the lights that were blue. And then once you dumped the chum in the water, they became red lights. And it illuminated through the playfield, and I didn't think that was going to look as cool as it did. So this is definitely bringing you in. And I would argue the same type of thing as like expression lighting kits, right?
Yeah.
Like expression lighting kits for music pins. In my book, that's a necessary upgrade.
Yeah.
Because it does feel so much different when you have the synchronized lights. It feels more like a concert. I am with you too on mods. I guess that my limit for this is where I'm trying to find that balance, because I totally agree that I am a topper guy. I did buy the most expensive topper I have is the Rush topper. Yeah. And I was playing Rush the other day and my wife came out from the office and she's like, "Hey, that's a cool topper mod." And I was like, "Yeah, it is." I didn't tell her it was $1,800, but yes, it was it is a cool topper. And so there is something about the experience. I try to walk that line though, because you're like, okay, so how much am I willing to put in the game? And am I willing to bling it up that much? And what, so I also feel that if I'm going to do it, I want it to feel as if it is next level for the OEM, right? Yeah. So you have the playfield plastics, which definitely, they're fine. they're there to give some sort of experience. But if you're going to put a mod in, it needs to take it to a next level.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to glue a Matchbox car underneath the hood and put an LED light on it and call it a James Bond car.
Yeah, I agree.
But there is a limit of okay, what do you like to do? So this actually, so you're in on the Stumbler mod. That's what you're saying.
Yep, I'm in on the Stumbler mod. Okay. Yes. So, well, and the other thing too is, so there's only, if I am going to mod the game,
okay,
I think there's only two other mods that I like feel like either is a necessity or is something like I don't mind spending money on.
Okay.
And that would be a color DMD.
Okay.
Because the perk of a color DMD is too, right, it's not game specific.
Right. So you can if you put take it out in your, if you want, right.
Yeah. So if you have a World Cup soccer, mm-hmm, and you go to sell your World Cup soccer, move it to your Whitewater or whatever. The other mod, I'm not a fan of art blades, but I love mirror blades.
Really?
Mirror blades. Yes. I love mirror blades.
I'm kind of the opposite. I prefer art blades over mirror blades.
Really? I like the mirror blade because it reflects the light, and I feel, mm-hmm, like it makes the game feel more open. I know it's really stupid, but it, like in my Attack from Mars limited edition.
Yes. It has Monster mirror Bash, blades. It looks really good on that. Does Monster Bash have those?
I want to say yes.
I'll have to go look. It
did on my LE.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I have the LE. So it probably has those things. I tend to like the art blades a little better.
Okay.
But the mirror blades, definitely something on the sides other than the black, I think look good. Right. Yeah. So I do want to get into this a little bit. So we talked to, again, our friend over at Triple Drain. So Travis Murray had mentioned that he knows people who they actually get like a pro version, a premium version, and an LE version.
Oh, yes.
And they mod up the premium version, and then they decide if they want to, which version they want to keep. And so I'm curious what people's approach to games are. Like, that seems like overkill to me to buy three games to mod one up, because the minimum amount of mods, if you're going through that, you're probably looking at anywhere from $500 to $1,500 on modding it out.
Yeah.
And then you're really getting into, well, should you have just got the LE, which is pre-modded basically. But I'd be curious to find out what people find the best mods are for games. Like, I did buy the armor package for Deadpool. And so I still haven't installed it because I am notorious for buying mods and then not actually putting them on games. So yeah. I do have the armor package that I haven't put on, the swords, the B. Arthur swords. And I do have the Tokyo sign mod from Stumbler. I just haven't installed it in the game yet. And I actually still have the flying monkey mod from Steve Govea. I've had it for like 7 years. But I did, Steve, install the Gus mod, the sarcophagus mod, which... If you're going to get something for Iron Maiden, you need to get that one. That is awesome. So I try to find like that balance of what I figure is worth it in games, because it really is, it doesn't affect the gameplay, but it does take it up to a next level as long as it doesn't look like AstroTurf with a glued golf cart.
And that's the other thing too. Some of these mods are ridiculous. Like they look bad. And then they're charging $50, $75, $100. Right. And I'm like, that's why I'm like, when I'm spending $250 to $300 on a Stumbler, I'm like, it's worth it. Like, well, you can see the craftsmanship.
It looks professional. And really, it looks better than the professional, right?
Yeah. 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 There's some Stern, some of the stuff they release, you're just like.
Yeah. I'm sorry. The toppers are, I have a love hate relationship with toppers. Like, there are a few of them where I look at it and it's like, even if I owned the game, I wouldn't buy that.
Yeah. Fun fact about B. Arthur, cause you were talking about Deadpool.
Yeah.
Did you know in the movie in Deadpool 2, when Ryan Reynolds is wearing his B. Arthur shirt from Golden Girls, he paid for the royalties to wear that shirt. The movie company wouldn't actually, they're like, no, we're not paying for you to wear that shirt. So he's like, fine, I'll just pay for it myself. Cause because Deadpool wears those shirts in the comics.
I'm learning
because, you know, Deadpool and Wolverine has been announced, and so all this stuff's coming out of the woodworks and whatnot. But it's crazy. But
okay, and by the way, okay, if you're going to do a sequel, George Gomez to Deadpool, do a Deadpool Wolverine.
Yes,
I am not kidding. Sell that, package it, get the licensing for it. That will sell.
Yeah,
that will be such a great game. And if you're looking at a Marvel type hookup, you need that hookup, because Deadpool is a great, it's a brutal game, but it's fun. It's still, that's one of the few games I've moved out of my basement to take a break from that I regret moving out of my basement.
It's a good game.
Yeah.
It's a really good game. And it's funny, because when I first played it, I was like, this game's so simple, it's annoying. And then I started playing more of it.
It's,
I'm
so
like, this
good.
Is actually quite a
it's
game.
So good. Yeah.
If anyone wants to trade me my Iron Maiden for a Deadpool Pro, let's have a conversation.
Yeah. No, you need to get the premium, man. You need the drop targets, because
really,
it's more fun. Okay. I'm a sucker for drop targets though.
Targets.
Like I will pay targets. I will pay the money for the drop targets, because it's just, I think it's just fun. It's that's one thing I love in pinball, is seeing how the game changes. And when you hit a target, it just goes down. Yeah. I love seeing that. So that's what I would get. Just pay the money and get the premium. And then you get the disco ball.
True. So you bring up a point of Stern needs to get a hold of Deadpool and Wolverine to do that machine.
Yep.
But I'm tying this in with, I saw on Facebook from Colin, who's over Kineticist and This Week in Pinball. And he poised a question, because everyone's been hearing the rumor, John Wick's next from Stern.
Sure.
More than likely it's John Borg as designer, Tim Sexton on code, with
probably Raymond with that. You think Raymond's going to be in that?
I think he might assist. Who knows? With Randy Martinez on artwork is what I'm hearing as well.
Okay. And Randy did like Mandalorian, Star Wars. Yeah. He did the line drawn stuff. Yeah.
So the question was poised, is John Wick too violent for Stern Pinball's brand that they're aiming for nowadays? Granted, we were talking about this before, and they've made Walking Dead. They've made Game of Thrones.
They've made Game of Thrones. They've made AC/DC.
Yeah.
They've made Iron Maiden.
Even heavy metal.
Yeah.
But that, I don't know if that was.
Nah, I don't really count heavy metal.
Iron Maiden's kind of brutal too. Like there's a part where ball.
Yeah.
And Eddie rips the ball out of his chest like it's his heart.
Yeah.
It's pretty gnarly.
Now I will say, if you're gonna look at it, it's still probably like PG-13.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's not, Iron Maiden has intentionally done that to make sure that their art style has been, you know, has been safe enough, right? It's been kind of like risky enough, but not like too bad. Like, I think of a story back in the day where they had, so when you used to buy a record, okay?
Yeah.
So there was one time they did like a sample piece with Eddie as in, okay, what is it called? Is it the Vitruvian Man? You know, the guy who's, you know, the Da Vinci thing.
Oh yeah. He's got the two hands up here.
Yeah. Where his arms are out and up like that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they made that for the decal in the middle of the record. And you know where the post goes.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Okay.
And Steve Harris from Iron Maiden is like, yeah, we can't do that. It'd be funny. It would be funny. But I can totally see someone's parent walking by and saying, what, you're listening to? Okay. This is also the band that have the 666 number of the beast.
Yeah.
So they were probably walking that fine line anyway, but apparently devil worship is less offensive to moms than a metal post in the groin, I guess.
And those jokes have been around for years.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But my point being, so do you think John Wick's too violent for Stern and what they're aiming for?
Okay. I am on record saying that I have not watched Game of Thrones, nor will I watch Game of Thrones, because it is too much for me.
Same here.
Yeah, this is a personal preference again.
I've never watched it. My cousin described it to me. He's like, to sum it up in two words, blood and bare chests.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
No, and there's a lot of that stuff, which is not, and it's not for me. Now, this is not me, by the way, saying that you can't enjoy that. That's the beauty of living in a free country, yeah, folks, is that
totally
they are not catering awesome to all audiences. And this is the same thing as doing the Supreme pinball machine. Like, the Supreme pinball machine is not aimed at me. One, I truly didn't know anything about Supreme before the pinball machine came out. Nor do I really know anything about it since. It seems like the app that there was an app that came out on iPhone, and it was the I'm Rich app that had, like, you paid $10,000 for it, and it just had a picture that said I'm rich. Yeah. Which, by the way, whoever sold that, brilliant, because they sold like 10 of them, but hey, that's $100,000. But it seems a little bit more like a flex, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's not for me. It's, I'm sure that it's a fun game, but I'd pay $5,000 for it. You know, it's like the home version, right?
Yeah.
So is John Wick too violent? They could actually release a version that is super violent, or they can release a version that's a little more PG.
Yeah.
I mean, they walk that line with Deadpool, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Deadpool, it's an R-rated movie. There's a lot of violence and a lot of language in that.
Yes.
And so they released the Deadpool comic, which is still, he's still sarcastic. He still has all his lines, but they made it enough for a home environment. However, do they need to make everything that's for a home environment? I would say no. I mean, Pulp Fiction is selling. That is not
like hotcakes.
Yeah. That is not a traditional family friendly movie. You're not taking your kids for a Saturday matinee to watch Pulp Fiction.
It has earned the R rating.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It didn't earn it. It like blew past it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you release John Wick? Yes. I would say absolutely. And there are enough people who will buy that. And Stern doesn't have to release something for, you know, everybody every time. In some ways, it's a little bit like Spooky, right?
Yeah.
You like the play, you like the layout, but you don't like the theme. Get Looney Tunes.
You're talking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, obviously not for the faint of heart.
Yes.
Right. But if you like the game, you can get the Looney Tunes version. Now, they're only releasing a game every year or two, right? Spooky. Yeah. It's not a fast release. Stern's releasing one every 4 months. So they don't to have something that is for, you know, PG for everybody. And they release The Sopranos.
Yeah.
There's like mode that has it's an F word mode.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got dance and strippers on the,
yeah,
the
exactly.
On the playfield. Yeah. And the playfield too.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, if the money makes sense, and Stern, you know, it's more inclusivity, right? Like, this hobby isn't made for one specific person. You don't have to throw a
party
person
for everybody.
Yeah.
Not every party has to be a kid-friendly party.
It's true. It is true. And so I think, honestly, if this is the same company that made Playboy.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think it's a big deal to do John Wick. It's one of those things, like you said, I enjoy Pulp Fiction. I think Pulp Fiction's a great game. It's not coming into my collection.
I watched it one time and I'm like, I'm probably not going to watch it again. But okay, here's just a question though. I just Googled it. What do you think the worldwide box office of the John Wick movie franchise is? Just throw out a guess.
Combined from 1 to 4?
Seems like it.
Okay.
Four movies.
I'm going to guess over $1 billion combined, because that's about 250,000 or 250.
It's over $1 billion combined. Okay. You don't think Stern would be interested in that kind of audience?
Yeah.
And it has a huge fan connection. Like, there's a fan base that goes after this, and it's, again, it's the demographic that's buying pinball machines.
Well, and literally, like, everyone's clamoring for a Matrix. Well, there's, okay, not everyone. There's a good chunk of pinball people I hear, they're like, I want Matrix. I want Matrix, okay, right?
I'd take Matrix if it's the first movie only.
Same here.
Don't put 2, 3, or 4 or whatever 5 they're going to make. Just the standalone one, Matrix 1. That's the only one that's worth anything.
But my point being, if you made it just off of 1, it was a soft R.
Yeah.
But the only reason it got an R was because of the violence. Because even the swearing, it doesn't even say the F word.
Wasn't it like a kick to the head or something?
Something. Honestly, yeah, I don't know if this rumor is true. Like, if you're a listener and you like can verify the story, my understanding is Matrix released really close to the Columbine shooting, and they didn't want kids to go see this to then think it was cool to do more shooting, and something to do with like also like parents and with the Columbine shooting, there was a sensitive subject. So they gave it an R so that teenagers weren't going and seeing this. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but that's really like, honestly, outside of, there's really no swearing. There's no sexual content in the first one.
Yeah,
like
they're shooting a lot of people.
There's a lot of innuendos.
It's not laser beam shots. This is guns. So I totally
But even then, like the shooting, I don't feel like something you wouldn't see in like a PG-13 movie. There's not a ton of blood. Like there is blood. Like there's, you see bullets going through legs and stuff like that. But I still like, it's not like Pulp Fiction.
Okay, Pulp Fiction is not PG. Yeah.
But you see what I'm saying? Like a gun goes off and the whole back windshield's covered. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where Matrix is not like that. So right. That's why I'm saying like, it'd be really weird to me. And granted, I haven't seen the John Wick movies. Maybe they're very, very violent.
They are very violent. The amount of people that he kills is like a ridiculous amount of people.
What did they say? 500 people combined over 4 movies?
Something like that.
All because they killed his dog?
John Wick death count. We go. Okay, here we go. John Wick death count is, oh geez, just give me the number.
just give me the number.
Where John Wick kill count is 439. Yikes.
That's a lot
of people. That's a lot.
What did we learn? We learned you don't kill this man's dog.
Yeah, I know. Seriously.
After he loses his, is it like he loses his whole family and the only thing he has left is his dog? Something like that. Anyhow. All right. Speaking of violent, speaking of brutal, Bram Stoker, Black Knight Sword of Rage is going back on the line. Just the pro, not the premium.
Okay.
Does this shock you? The rumors are like, they're trying to like take the wind out of Steve Ritchie's sails.
No, I don't think so. It's about money. Like Stern doesn't care. Legit Stern doesn't care about the programmer. You could argue that they were releasing the monsters you could argue that. Okay, fine. But to take the sale, Monster Bash remake was coming out at the same time. Was that what the rumor was?
No, they're because Steve Ritchie's not at Jersey Jack.
No, I'm just saying people have that thing. Now, is it possible that there are ways that they can like poke at people? Sure.
Yeah.
And you had Foo Fighters come out with like an alien theme.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what does that have? I know that Foo Fighters is kind of alien, but it definitely was. Hey, we can, whatever you can do, we can do better. I totally get that.
Yeah.
But that's not the driving force. Like the driving force of this is the pros were the topper. They re-released the topper. Yeah. By the way, when I bought the topper, I bought it for like $450.
And what's it selling for now?
A lot more.
Was it $2,000?
Yeah, I think so.
What that's a 400% increase?
Yeah.
Is that where we're about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it $2,000 or is it $1,500?
Still for a topper that was $450 when it was originally released.
Yeah.
But here's another insane thing too. This game seriously is probably just getting released, like re-released for the topper, right? Like there's no,
yeah. I think
is
so.
There demand for Black Knight Sword Rage? My understanding, it was the worst.
Well, Okay, but
numbers wise, it was one of the worst performing Sterns out there.
It was, and this is the problem, right? And we've seen this with Stranger Things. We've seen this with Monsters. We've seen it with even Ghostbusters to an extent.
Yeah.
Where it comes out, it goes through a rough patch, it doesn't keep up with sales, and so they cut it short. And then people say, hey, I still want... So this is the supply and demand thing, right? I think the topper is still one of my all-time favorite toppers.
Yeah.
It is really cool. And I have a love-hate relationship with Black Knight. I kind of love to hate it in some ways because I wanted to love it so much.
Yeah.
Because the upper play field. Okay. If it's a build of materials issue, how much is one of those stupid physical ball locks?
I don't know.
Okay. Do you think
it's got to be a coil and a post? So you're $20 plus the form. I don't know.
Do you really think it's that cheap, that physical ball lock up top?
I mean, I'm
betting it's like $150.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Something like that. You don't think that you could, okay. Again, this is me pure speculation. Okay. But you don't think that they could pull that out, put a flipper, a pop bumper, some targets up there and make it worthwhile up there. Because that is the most vacant play field. I mean, it is so vacant, they made it transparent.
Well, not only that, but like tournament people hate it because you can sit up there all day long if it's not brutalized.
Yeah.
It's a pointless upper play field, especially when you look at Black Knight, 2000, you look at Black Knight, it just.
Yeah. There's a purpose for the upper play field, right?
Yeah.
So I just wish that it would to be blunt. I think the pro's a better game.
Yeah. 100%. That's probably why they're only running the pro.
Yeah. But there are people who disagree and that's totally fine. You know, but this is my preference. I would rather have the pro version of it. My friend actually sold his LE to get a pro.
Yeah. It's one of those games that, like, if you really do like it, there's no reason to hold on to
the music's awesome.
Premium Ellie. Oh, yeah.
The music's awesome.
It really is a great game. It really is.
The vibe is so good.
It's a dark horse. It really is. Like, I'd pick this game over some of other Stern's catalog. It's just.
Yeah. And you know what, man? I wish this one had the expression lighting kit. That would be great.
Yep.
With the music.
Well, and I think it's a testament to how good the topper is when, I mean, really look at Ninja Turtles does a similar thing. It's a Technodrome, but the eye moves just like the head does on Black Knight. Foo Fighters just came out. It's the Megatron. It's the Footron. Yeah. Its head moves and talks to you. We're reproducing this in different games. And so the concept's the same. It might not be as well executed as Black Knight.
Yeah.
But we're going back to the same well, essentially.
Right.
And I, like I said, it speaks to how good Black Knight's topper is. That's the only game that I know of where people are like, yeah, it's a good game. If you slap the topper on it, it's worthy of going into the collection.
Okay, I just pulled up the picture. Okay, that mechanism up there, I'm guessing was at least $200.
Yeah,
that looks a little more engineered, but I don't think you need the physical ball lock up there.
No, you don't. You really don't.
And having the Black Knight. Now I know that Steve spent all his money, his build of material, on that ridiculous high cost Black Knight dude, but you have to admit it's really cool.
It really is. And honestly, let's be honest, this game is just kind of a love letter to Steve Ritchie and his career, right? Like, sure. He is the Black Knight, so it's a cool way to honor him in a modern age.
And it's a total gut punch. I mean, it is not an easy game. It's a total gut punch. But I just wish that upper play field had more. Oh, okay. I mean,
more something, some stand-ups and whatnot.
Yeah, just the upper, it just felt like the upper playfield had nothing.
Yeah.
So
speaking,
I don't know. It will sell more toppers, but I don't think there's a lot of demand for it. I really don't.
Okay. Speaking of gut punches.
Okay.
There are fans of the Blues Brothers crying around the world. Did you hear about this? Home Pin has acquired their next game they're releasing should be shown this weekend at PinFest Newcastle.
Yeah.
Oh, so we'll have footage of this next week.
Okay. So Josh, okay. I usually take the first take on this. What is your take? Okay. I don't think either of us really have much of a connection with Blues Brothers. I've never seen the show. Have you ever seen the show?
I've never seen the show, okay. But I heard it's a classic. It's definitely a classic.
tends to be of the demographic of people who are probably in their 50s and 60s.
I feel like, right? I don't need to see the Blues Brothers, and I'm going to tell you why.
What?
I watched Eddie Murphy's, is it Delirious? The one where he's wearing the red suit.
Yes. Delirious. He has the red suit. Raw. He had the blue suit.
Okay.
And so Delirious was actually kind of funny. Like, okay. Everybody. Okay. I'm not going to get into the whole like PC stuff. Okay. That stuff is totally not PC. And I will argue that it was a different time.
It was early 80s.
Yeah. It was an early 80s. Let's just say there's a lot of stuff that would not fly today in comedy.
Yeah.
But he's a funny guy. But yeah, it was a different era. Absolutely. So what are you getting at with that?
A lot of the comedians I enjoy. So Gabriel Iglesias like referenced that seeing Delirious is what made him want to be a comedian. A lot of people reference Eddie Murphy's Delirious, right?
It has some really funny skits, like the Ice Cream Man. If you haven't heard the Ice Cream Man,
that one's great.
That was awesome. Yeah.
So, but my point being is I watched Delirious, and by the end of it, I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, why is this such a classic? Then I realized the reason I don't get it is because all these jokes have literally been stolen from this and placed in other movies I've seen growing up.
Yep.
So by the time I actually finally saw Eddie Murphy's Delirious, I'd already heard all the material because it had been quoted in everything else.
Right.
So where I'm getting at with this is I could probably watch Blues Brothers. I'd probably love it. But there is a lot of cultural references to Blues Brothers. There's been a lot of, you know, bits done in other movies and other TV series. I feel like if I watch Blues Brothers, I'd be like, I've seen this before. I haven't, but I have it. It's deja vu. So personally, me, I am a fan of the old school Saturday Night Live. I feel like they have lost their way a little bit. They come out with a gem every once in a while, but that old school Dan Aykroyd, Steve Martin, you know,
you're talking old school, like the first 5 years.
Yeah. And even up to Adam Sandler, David Spade, Chris Farley stuff.
So that's the 90s stuff. So
yes,
kind of the 80s was kind of a no man's land. The 90s, the early 90s was a little bit of it was an embarrassment of riches, really.
Yeah.
And they had Chris Farley, they had David Spade, they had Mike Myers, they had Dana Carvey. And okay, ironically, Dana Carvey of that mix, he was the star of the show.
Dana Carvey
didn't do anything after. Now I know he had a lot of health problems, but the fact that he was the star of the show of that era, and you had like Adam Sandler, who went on to make like $4.5 billion in movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So David Spade once said, because they're like, would you ever be on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire as a host or whatever? He's like, I was already on that show once, and they showed a picture, and it was that cat. It was like the 91 or 92 cast of Saturday Night Live. And literally the whole cast had made millions, like individually, they'd all made millions by themselves.
Yeah.
So anyway, the point being
speaking of Eddie Murphy though, do you know why Eddie Murphy was so ticked at Saturday Night Live for years? Mm-mm. It was the David Spade joke.
Which one was that?
So you know how he would do like the Hollywood Minute, and David Spade is a sarcastic guy, right? He is a sarcastic guy. So he would go through, and you know, Eddie Murphy had a lot of hits.
Yeah.
And then he did, it was like the vampire or Harlem Nights. And then he did like a vampire, Then he just like lost it and just did a whole bunch of stinkers. I think when the
Shrek revived his career,
when the when the vampire thing came out,
yeah,
because he would just have his little minute, and he's like, he put up the ad, you know, the movie poster, and he said, yeah. "Oh, look, a star's falling," and they just kept moving on. And that's Eddie Murphy terrible. Was so ticked at that, that he like would like he was so mad. It was accurate, but that's
It was accurate.
It was that's accurate. Funny. Yeah, he just put a whole bunch of stinkers out there.
Kit, where were we going with this?
Blues Brothers.
Guess obviously,
Blues Brothers.
We care more about Saturday Night Live
than Blues Brothers. Yeah, absolutely.
No, Blues Brothers. That's really what it comes down to. Honestly.
Uh huh.
If you haven't listened to Dr. John, did a fantastic job. If you haven't looked, go to the Pinball Network. Do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe after this episode
of interviewing
the Aussie podcast.
Oh,
of what is his name?
Mike,
the owner of Home Pin, and it's just such an insane ranting of a man that's just giving the middle finger to America. And it's hey, if that's what your business wants to be, cool, whatever.
Yeah, He didn't win bonus points from that episode and basically just saying he's not going to do business in America because he had like six bad experiences with customers.
I thought it was like three returned PayPal things from America. Three or four.
Basically just painted everybody in America as like unreliable. I'm like, wow, that's
what do we have? Interesting. Almost 400 million people here in America. And we've based the whole demographic off of four. Yeah, anywho. But my point being is I've played Thunder Turds. I've played Spinal Crap.
Ooh.
They just.
They're not for pinball players.
No, they're not. It's a weird concept. You're making pinball for non-pinball people. It doesn't make sense to me. But hey, you obviously are still making money, or you have learned how to swindle people out of money.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why you've moved from Australia to China to Taiwan. To
Taiwan, yeah. He actually moved out of Taiwan, out of China.
I'm surprised. Yeah. Oh, has he moved out of Taiwan now?
No, he moved out of China to Taiwan. I really haven't kept up with him.
I wonder how the earthquake's affecting him. Obviously not too much if they're releasing Blues Brothers.
I would argue that the Blues Brothers, okay, we're not talking like, okay, there's like A-list titles, B-list titles, C-list titles. This is in that cult title. Like it's a, it's kind of along the lines of if someone decided to release Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
Like you're going to have some passionate fans. So
yeah, but I think if you released Rocky Horror Picture Show and did it like the way you did Elvira's House of Horrors.
Yeah.
It'd sell gangbusters. I think it's the way you present it.
It may have. It may. But the,
Paging Franchi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Chris Franchi is saying
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Look, I already got Dr. Frankenfurter. Wait, what was his name? That like the Tim Curry. Yeah.
Yeah.
I already got that set up for you. Yeah. So it's one of those, it's a cult classic. It's more of like people who are in their 50s and 60s, really just who's gonna buy it? People who are like grandpas. Who are just looking for, hey, I just want something in my house. And maybe they don't care. Maybe they don't care about competitive pinball or having it work super well.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay, but your level of excitement on this from a scale of 1 to 10.
With it being home pin, maybe a 2.
Okay, let's just say on the theme pinball alone.
On the theme, I think it's cool when they do, obviously I wasn't a huge fan of Godzilla as a theme, but I think Keith knocked it out of the park so well that I'm like, it makes me a believer.
Godzilla. Okay. But Godzilla as a theme is a 2. It is. It is a cult thing. It's campy. It's obviously,
it's hard for me to judge on a theme that I've never seen the movie too. So it's like,
yeah, but Keith spun straw into gold. And maybe you would put Godzilla as a 3 just because there are people who are really fun, fans of the campiness, right? Yeah. The Blues Brothers, they haven't been relevant for 25 years.
Yeah.
And I don't see that they're not going to get revitalized from this. So you're probably selling to an older demographic who's just looking for something in their game room. But as a theme itself, it's not for me. I would show zero interest in buying this.
My prediction is if Thunder Turds and Spinal Crap gives me any idea of where the gameplay is going to go.
That's going to be terrible.
With Blues Brothers, we can officially call it Snooze Brothers now.
It's going to be terrible, but okay, this is what I've always said. Prove me wrong.
Yeah.
Prove me wrong. If I'm wrong, great. These are our predictions. I'd happily eat
crow. Seriously, yeah. I'd happily eat
These
crow
are our predictions, crazy. And if you put out a good game, then we have no problem with saying we got that one wrong.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is the one thing I do appreciate, that people, when they listen to us, they say, we enjoy what you're saying because we feel like you're fair and balanced.
Yeah.
Like, no one's necessarily like safe. They're like, we're not going to thrash on someone, right? Like, this is probably the meanest we're going to get on home pin.
Okay. We'll still criticize though, when we feel that
it's constructive criticism, right? Like, it's us saying, hey, this is where we think you fell short. This is where we think you can improve. And we enjoy your guys' products.
I wonder if there's a whole bunch of drop targets in the back that spell Blues Brothers.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
How many would that be?
Disco ball.
Like 13 or something?
No, there's just going to be a center ramp that you have to spell Blues Brothers.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
You know what? You might win people over by doing a long enough sweepable drop target bank that spelled out Blues Brothers.
That would be kind of cool, actually. And then if they spat out like 13 balls, like Apollo 13.
Yes. Love it. Yeah. Genius.
Yeah. I wonder if it'll be like just the Blues Brothers, or if it'll be, cause they did like a sequel with John Goodman. Cause what's his name?
I bet it's the old one. Like, and the other thing too is
John Belushi died.
The only redeeming quality of this is like $4,800 for this game.
Yeah.
But okay, even then,
you at least nailed the price point.
Yeah.
You nailed the price point. So if you're finding something that's like the equivalent of a home pin, like a home version, like a Stern home version, then this may actually be similar to that. I think the Stern home versions are actually quite good, but
I agree.
You know, it's in that ballpark. At least they're not trying to sell it for $9,000.
True. All right. And our last note on the notes we have for tonight.
Okay.
We want to say congratulations to Mia Harbosky. She is the new person down at CGC. She's the person that took Ryan White's spot. Slam Tilt, you beat us to it.
They
released an episode two days ago. Like, by the way, Ryan White's out. He's been out since December. I've heard amazing things about Mia already. I've heard distributors are loving her. She's doing a great job. Mia, if you listen, I don't know if you do or not.
Of course she does. She like
welcome to the show all the time.
Yeah.
If not, Butch will be like, hey, by the way, the loser kids say congratulations and good job. Seriously, I'm hearing great things. Yeah. So,
and that's good. We've always said we love what CGC does. We don't like the speed at which they do it, but we do love what they do. And I have 4 of your games downstairs. So it obviously something's working right in what you're doing.
Can I give you some inside baseball? I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for this or not.
Ooh, go ahead.
I actually was in talks with CGC about working with them. But because I was unwilling to relocate to Chicago, it wasn't for Ryan's White position. I was actually asking to help out. I feel like their communication is terrible, and I feel like their social media presence is non-existent.
Well, okay, a lot of these companies, their social media presence probably can do some upgrading. Yeah,
but they kind of wanted an all-in-one package.
Yeah,
and so,
Hey, maybe she can do that. Great.
Maybe. Really, honestly, I think the bar is kind of low for CGC when it comes to that stuff. If Mia's already knocking it out of the park, like people are saying she is, then I don't see a problem moving forward. I think she'll do great. And if she's over social media, awesome. If not, I'll give you some pointers. Reach out. So,
okay.
I'm not saying we're perfect with Loser Kid, but there's some easy stuff that you could be doing with your social media account. Like, they have like 3 posts on Instagram.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a Pulp Fiction post on there yet.
Josh knows a lot more about social media than I do. I've kind of checked out a little bit on social media. Okay. I do have a question for our listeners though. I will plan on upgrading my Simpsons, and I could either do the color DMD, the LCD, or the LED version. Okay. I actually have tried both options. Now, the LCD, it actually works great for like Pirates of the Caribbean, like the Stern one.
Yeah.
And it worked really well for that. For Spider-Man, it didn't work out so well. Like Iron Man. Like the LED actually worked out a lot better for that, with the movie picture pixelation capture thing. It actually worked better with the LED. So I wonder if someone has a strong feeling about Simpsons with the LED or LCD.
You can go on the website and kind of do a side by side.
Yeah, I know, comparison. I know. I've done that and I've seen it, and that's why I've gone.
I think a lot of people prefer the LCD over the LED.
I think they do but you know what? I think a lot of people like the ability to blend the dots.
Yeah.
And I think they look worse when you blend the dots. Yeah.
I do too, because it's almost too rigid still. They're not as fluid.
Yeah, it looks, let's just say this, especially the Simpsons one, it looks weird.
Yeah.
So
that's why I'm gonna just keep the dots.
I still like the dots, yeah. But anyway, that's my reach out. Anything else, Josh?
So we do have some person. We have a person that did reach out and left us four questions they wanted to hear. So,
okay, all right, let's go ahead.
Julie, thanks for sending these in. First question is, what is a dream theme you would like to see made into a pinball machine? Who do you want the company, what company and designer would you choose to make it?
I'm not hiding that I love Keith Elwin machines, because the bottom line is Keith has that secret sauce. So I will take Keith on any game. That's not to say I can't like other designers too, but if I'm choosing one, I'm choosing Keith. I will choose Stern just because of they have a price point and reliability that works out for most. And Stern has that big bang for your buck. Okay.
Yep.
Dream theme. Ooh. Okay, man. I'm trying to figure out like what are the things that I would definitely want.
I've narrowed it down to two.
Okay. What theme would you like?
So I'm in the same boat with you. I want Elwin. I want Stern to make it.
Okay.
I want either the Aquabats. Yes. Dude, go watch. So Tubi. It's a free TV app.
This is back from like our fourth episode or something like that. We were talking about dream themes. It's still your dream theme 5 years later.
And you want? Dang you, Jack Danger, for teasing it on Facebook the other day about, do you want to see an Aquabats pinball machine? Yes, we do.
Okay.
I think it'd be easy. Anywho.
Okay.
It sets itself up. If you haven't watched the Aquabats Super Show or listened to their music, I highly recommend it. It is goofy. It is silly.
Okay.
It's not for everyone. Okay. Second one, and I think it would do gangbusters, is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Okay.
The theme is still going strong after 20 years. They just released a new Netflix series called Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, which was an awesome rehash of the story. The cast, if you could get the cast, Chris Evans, Brie Larson, who did Captain America, Michael Cera, Todd Larson.
She was in that.
Okay. She was in that.
Okay.
The guy that
Captain
plays
Marvel. She did Captain Marvel, not Captain America.
Captain Marvel. Sorry. She did Captain Marvel. And Chris Evans was Captain America.
Right.
And then Todd, I can't remember his last name or not. It's not Todd. Who's the guy that plays Shazam? And he also is the voice of Flynn.
Zachary Levi.
Yes, he was in it. He was one of the evil exes. It has so many people, and they all love that movie so much. I was listening to an interview from Chris Evans the other day, and he says they're still in the same chat. Granted, this movie came out like 15 years ago.
Sure.
They're still on the same chat, like email chain or whatever. Mm. And it's very active. They all love that movie. And we would be, they actually voice the characters for the new cartoon series on Netflix. So I just, it would be very easy to do kind of Deadpool-esque where you're fighting the evil exes. It's easy. Like there's seven of them. You have to fight them to then be with Ramona. I just think it's a great theme for pinball, and it would just if you've ever seen the movie, like when he's fighting, there's a part where he's like doing multiple combos, like where he's just like, and it's like 56, 57, 58. It'd be so cool, like, to have a fight mode where you like have to follow the arrows, right? But the final shot is on a spinner, and when you hit the spinner, it does the combo count up, the 56, 57, as he's beating the crap out of Matthew Patel or whoever it is. I think it'd do great. I think it's old enough that you're going to hit an older generation, but still relative enough that you're going to, like, the younger generation is going to be appealed to. Plus, it's got the whole video game thing going for it, like classic video game thing. Okay. So, yeah, that's my spill.
Okay. So, and we've talked about themes that I think would be great. I really do think Deadpool and Wolverine would be a hit. I would love to see that.
That's your dream theme? Or that you're just saying that?
You know, okay, dream theme, we've talked about this. I would love to have a Super Mario Brothers game.
Yes, 100%.
Like, that is an absolute no-brainer. I would take Super Mario Brothers over Zelda, and Zelda would be a close second. Because I haven't played two... Okay, full disclosure, I've only played two of the Zelda games.
And
the NES ones, like the original gold cartridge. The
side scrolling everyone hated because Okay.
So I have that one. And, well, the side scrolling is number two.
Number two, yeah. Adventure of Link, yeah.
Yeah. And so I've done the first two. So that was those are kind of fun. But I would definitely take Super Mario Brothers. Okay. I'm just gonna throw out a few others that I think would be great. I'd love to see the Killers.
The Killers would be great.
A great pinball machine. Not their later crap. Their earlier crap. Okay.
Yeah. That's almost any band, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Up to day and age. You can do all that stuff up to day and age. Definitely do the Killers. Andor.
I would pick Muse for you because I know you love
Muse. Oh, Muse would be great. Muse would be fantastic. And
I think you could do a whole pin just off of Knights of Cydonia. Like literally that song. You could,
you know, that's but I will say Simulation Theory on Muse because it has that whole 80s retro video game concept. And in the concert, he goes up to a video game and gets sucked into it, kind of like Tron.
Yeah.
Like it would be.
I think Muse would be great.
Those are music pins. And we know that. The next question is
what mom or dad band would you like to see made into a pin? So I'm going to, I should have told you that too, because
Pink would have been great, by the way. Pink, yeah. I still say Pink would be a great band or a performer to do it. Taylor Swift, seriously, if you put out a Taylor Swift one, I could buy one and put it in my mother-in-law's house.
Well, you could put one in every,
Taylor Swift should have a pinball machine.
Oh, what is the store where you go in to get your girl's ears pierced? You shouldn't because like they
traumatize
you.
Hot Topic or something? Or
not Hot Topic, but they're like in every Walmart or whatever. It's one of those little girl stores that... Anyhow, I'm like, you could buy a Taylor Swift pinball machine and put them all at those.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
No, all right. Yeah, definitely. Those are just off the top of my head. And you can always throw in like Van Halen. There's a whole bunch of 80s rock that you could do. Van Halen would be great. Motley Crue, probably not safe for work, but it would sell.
All right. So moving on to the next question, you're saying a bunch of bands. So which mom or dad rock bands would you love to see themed into a pinball machine?
You know, I would say that Journey would be great. Journey would be great.
Keeps on turning.
Yeah. No. It does have some slow songs. It has some jammers. Def Leppard would be great too. Bon Jovi sold a billion albums.
Yeah.
So really, you're looking at kind of that glam rock era of the 80s. So those would be the huge ones that would still be quite safe. I mean, everybody would love a Van Halen, really. But then it'd be like, is it Van Halen or Van Hagar? And I grew up more in the Van Hagar era. And so I tend to like those songs a little more, but I appreciate the other songs. But you could even do just a pinball machine off Def Leppard Hysteria.
Yeah. No, I agree. The Aquabats? No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Yeah, I will check out the Aquabats. I know I bust your chops on it, but I will check out the Aquabats.
I will send you a couple songs that aren't so crazy. I'll send you the ones that are definitely. So the band I would love to see, Sum 41. I think.
Okay, that's their more music, of a 90. Okay, that probably is dad rock now.
It is dad rock. But the cool part about them, I don't know if you know much about Sum 41.
Don't know anything.
But they do appeal to an older generation too, because they grew up on Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Metallica. So they did incorporate a lot of those elements into their music, especially in the earlier years. So there is kind of a classic rock vibe to their punk pop stuff. They just released what they're claiming to be their final album. They're hanging it up after this tour. It's called Heaven and Hell. If you have not checked it out, it is amazing. Heaven is the pop punk side. And then as they grew, you know, as they made it later into their career. So the first 15 years is like pop punk. The last 15 years has been metal. And so, and when I say metal, it's more like, you know, like 80s, like speed Metallica metal kind of stuff, you know, not
Master
not
like of Puppets.
Norwegian.
Yeah.
Master of Puppets, stuff like that. With a little more heft to it, a modern edge. But if you haven't checked out that album, it's a double album. Amazing from start to finish. But yeah, I think Sum 41, you've got so much content there because they did this whole playing off of that 70s, 80s riff of they had a fake band within the band called Pain for Pleasure, where they dressed up looking like Judas Priest and they were, you know, devil worshipers or whatever, you know, like the whole gag from the 80s and whatnot and Iron Maiden. Yeah. You could tie that in easily. There's so much good music from first album to last album. I think the thing about Sum 41 is they took a lot of what they loved and they tried to mimic it and expand upon it. And they did a really good job of that. So that's why a lot of it sounds like Blink-182, Green Day, Iron Maiden. So I don't know. I just think that Sum 41, they are technically a dad rock band. They're from the 90s. I'm a dad.
Okay.
I think if you're going to go with a band, I'm up for Linkin Park. Muse is great. Green Day is amazing.
Okay, so I just thought of three bands that there is one that will sell definitely to New York, especially Ron and Bruce, Steel Panther. They could definitely do the Steel Panther band. Ron and Bruce would definitely go in on that one. I did think of Green Day, American Idiot. Just do an American Idiot pinball machine. That would be great. And the one, I don't know why this has totally escaped us, but why has there never been talk about an Aussie pinball machine?
I don't know. And that's what's funny is like when Venom was coming out and Aussie was
Aussie showed up at that thing, and we all assumed that it was going to be Aussie's music in there.
Yeah.
Which and turned out to be a total gag. But Aussie, like, why isn't there an Aussie machine?
I still don't know why there isn't a Pink Floyd machine. If you're going to start talking about
snooze.
Still conceptual wise.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Fine. I'm Pink Floyd. Yes. They sold a billion of them, but that'd be like the Eagles. Yeah. Laughing point, fast.
And lane. I agree with you. Like Crazy Train's going to appeal to me a lot more than money.
Yeah.
But concept wise, there's a lot there.
Okay. Ozzy should have a machine. Okay. I agree. On the bandwagon. Ozzy should have a machine.
I agree.
I'm starting the engine.
So do you do Ozzy or do you do Black Sabbath?
You do Ozzy. Okay. Ozzy sold way more as a solo artist than Black Sabbath.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Black Sabbath was like a springboard for a ton of careers. And then the people just never, Ozzy left. Ronnie James Dio left. Zakk Wylde. There was multiple guitarists that
was Zakk Wylde well. Ever part of Black Sabbath, or was he just Ozzy's guitarist?
Maybe he was just Ozzy's guitarist
because the original guitarist that Ozzy started with was named Randy Rhoads, and you know, there's the song Flying High Again. He actually died because he was high doing like loop de loops in a plane, and then they had another guy for a while, like JP something. I just remember him because he looked very unique. He was half Asian. So he looked unique, especially for an 80s band. And
was it Tony Iommi? Is he the gentleman that?
No, I think it was like, wasn't it JP or something? I can't remember.
Billy Ward, Geezer Butler, Ozzy Osbourne.
No, I think the guy immediately followed Randy Rhoads.
There's a ton of people. It's funny when you go to Wiki and it's like, it tells you like four members, and then literally under that it says list of Black Sabbath and Heaven and Hell members. Like, oh,
No, I'm just talking Ozzy Osbourne members.
Yeah. What I'm saying though is there's a lot of people that springboarded off of Black Sabbath is all I was trying to say.
Okay. So. Jake Lee. That's who I was thinking of. So you had Randy Rhoads died, and then Jake Lee took over, and I think he was only with him for like an album. Then I think Zakk Wylde came on board, and yeah. Anyway, okay.
Holy crap! The list of people that have been in Black Sabbath is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, you get paid. Yeah, that's the bottom line, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, if you want a touring gig, that's definitely where you go.
But oh yeah.
Anywho, yeah, I agree with you. Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne should have had a pinball machine by now.
Yep.
I think there's still a pill there as well. I think if you're going to go
It would totally sell. Yeah.
So here's another point too. So Gene Simmons said that there's no such thing as rock icons anymore, and you can't consider Nirvana one because they only did a couple albums.
Well, Gene's wrong.
I agree. Gene's wrong.
Gene's wrong. Nirvana single-handedly, there's pre-Nirvana and post-Nirvana. Yeah. Nirvana basically started all the grunge stuff.
Yeah.
It's not even close.
Not even close.
I remember that, and there's a story that I have no proof on, but it was the David Coverdale from Whitesnake. As soon as he heard Nirvana, he's like, well, we had a good run. Our career's over.
I think every generation has a band, right? Like the Beatles inspired so many people.
Yeah, and the Beatles were 64 to 69.
And then when you look at bands that made it successful,
there's Van Led Halen, Zeppelin.
I was going to say Van Halen was very influential. We wouldn't have Pantera without him. Yeah. And most of your metal would not have been there. Then Nirvana, after Nirvana. I think the problem is we've had this discussion before, is the music industry has pivoted so hard. Yeah, well, it's fragmented. It's
fragmented because we don't have, and this is part of society's issue too, we don't have shared experiences anymore.
Yeah.
Because everybody, and we're benefiting from this, right? I mean, that's the whole point of pinball. Pinball has thrived under this, hey, we have an interest in pinball, so we're breaking away and forming our own community.
Yeah.
So we definitely thrive and benefit from that. So there's benefits and detriments to it, but there are very few giant bands anymore. You could argue Taylor Swift would be one, Maroon 5 would be one. You could argue even Rihanna for worldwide stuff. You could even argue Bad Bunny, but people would know a Maroon 5 song. Very few people outside of a certain demographic would recognize a Bad Bunny song.
So I was listening to, if you've never listened to Finn McKenty, he's a really good gentleman that kind of specializes in kind of punk rock from about mid 80s up to this point. Like he's actually got a pretty good finger on the pulse of what punk rock is nowadays.
Yep.
And he was talking about like, is rock dead? Like we hear this, like,
That's what Gene Simmons said, and I agree. I think it is.
So he's like, are we just old geezers standing on the front porch saying, like, get off my lawn? His point being, I really like this concept. So he brought up art. Mm-hmm. Art was kind of stale till about the mid-1800s, I want to say, is where it was at. Then you had an explosion of artists. They were doing different things. Pablo Picasso, you know, Jackson Pollock. All this creativity and everything, but then all of a sudden it kind of felt like everything that could be done with art was done with art. But there was a good 70-year span of where it was just everything was new and fresh, right? But ever since then, like, art hasn't died off. Obviously art is still around. It's still very appreciated. It's very loved. But there's no like art icons, right? Like we still talk Pablo Picasso. We still talk Van Gogh.
Right.
I mean, you could argue Banksy, but I feel like Banksy's more of a, it's because of his political stance. It's a brand more than it is.
We have brands more. And even Picasso became a brand.
Yeah.
And you look at his early stuff and you could tell he was an amazing artist, but he became a brand.
Correct. But his juxtaposition was like, if you do that with rock, like rock has been around, it's had a really good about 70 year run from the 60s. Like if you start with Elvis, who you could probably say was the start of rock and roll.
Yeah,
the Beatles perfected it in the 60s or gave it a really good bump in a direction. Mm-hmm. But then we started fragmenting from everywhere. Like you got Ramones that started punk. You've got AC/DC that did more rock, hard rock. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so it's all kind of been done. Like metal, like rock is kind of got to the last breath of everything that's fresh and new. But it doesn't mean it's dead, but it still means that.
I would argue that it's not dead, but it's dead as a massive selling mainstream product. Because there are new bands out there. I have a friend who's really into like European metal, and I've heard some of the new metal coming out of there, and it's very awesome. Like it's kind of like the Iron Maiden has that symphonic metal sound. It's not the scream metal, but it has that the fast metal, and it usually has a female voice because they can hit higher notes, and it's really good. Yeah. But it's not mass consumption like it used to be. Because when I grew up, there were, not kidding, there were four stations. ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox. And don't even, the PBS stuff didn't count.
Yeah.
That's it. And so we all consume the same stuff. We don't do that anymore.
No, we don't. And it, honestly, I think Taylor Swift has done an amazing job of be able to break boundaries of, we live in a day and age, like you said, everyone kind of has their entertainment, right? Taylor Swift's the only one that I feel like has somehow invaded everyone's entertainment, right? Yeah. Whether it's her music, whether it's her love life, whatever it may be.
She's been able to, to maintain some sort of connection. So there really should be a Taylor Swift pinball machine.
There probably should. But I guess my point being, I just feel like rock and roll, whatever you want to call it. I feel like we've kind of perfected that, and there's still going to be great artists that come out. There's still great artists that are producing stuff. I mean,
but they're not going to be Led Zeppelin. They're not, they're not going to be even for everything U2 did. They're not the Beatles.
Well, I think the other part too is there's just almost no money to be made in music anymore. Unless
there isn't performing. There isn't performing.
Correct. Like, I don't know do you know who Dragon Force is? Have you heard that song, Through the Fire and Flames?
No.
So it was huge back in the 2000s because it's very like 80s-esque metal. Like,
okay.
I think they call it like power metal over in Europe.
Anyhow, okay.
It was on Guitar Hero. It was in Guitar Hero 3, and it was the hardest song to play on there.
Okay.
But those guys blew up substantially because of that. It's called Through the Fire and Flames. If you haven't heard it,
okay,
go give it a listen. It's definitely worth it.
Send me a link and I'll listen to it. Yeah,
definitely. You'll love it. If you feel like Iron Maiden and stuff like that, you're going to love this song.
We did kind of go down the rabbit hole onto music themes.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. So just quick couple minutes, other themes that would be good.
Sorry. Like, let me finish my story though. So I
thought you were done. Sorry.
No. So my point being is so this massively successful song, a band that's done very well for themselves, they got paid $3,000 for Through the Fire and Flames for Guitar Hero 3. Mm-hmm. When they were talking to the guitarist, he says $3,000 might sound like a decent amount of money, but then you've got to split that. He's like, there's five members in the band.
Yeah, no, it's nothing.
We had a manager. We had the record label. He said there was probably about 10 different people that got a cut.
Yeah.
Split $3,000 10 ways. Maybe $300.
Legit nothing. However, the band Jet got their breakthrough from an iPod commercial.
Yeah.
The dun 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 dun.
True.
And they got their big break. So that's not necessarily a bad move for marketing. Now, whether they can sell concert tickets, that's another thing, but it's not.
But I agree with you. You have to be a performer. If you're going to make music, you're going to have to be a performer. Yep. My Chemical Romance, that's why they've done so well, is because they were able to take conceptual albums and then apply them to a live action.
Okay, legitimately, experience. The first time I saw like the Black Parade, though, I saw it without sound. And yeah. I imagined a completely different sound coming out of that band. I thought it was going to be like some sort of speed metal.
Yeah. It's such a good album. Yeah. If you haven't checked out that one, that's not one. Okay. Sorry. So what was your question?
Okay. We went down the rabbit hole of music.
Yes.
Okay. And obviously music pins, we know, sell and do great in a home environment. Yeah. The question was themes. Okay. Now I talked about Super Mario Brothers. I've talked about that other stuff. A couple other things like, Andor would be an awesome one. By the way, if you're a Star Wars fan and you haven't watched the Andor series, you definitely need to watch that. It's along with Rogue One. It's my favorite stuff coming out of Star Wars. Other things that could be, are we talking like movie themes? Are we talking?
She just said your dream theme. So just pretty much, that's why I gave you top two.
I dream old. So I probably go with more of the nostalgia themes things that I thought were cool when I was 14.
So we're almost at an hour and a half. Let's get these last two questions. Third one's okay. How do we feel about a Brené Brown pinball machine?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're going to have to go for an Oprah machine. You know, you get a machine, you get a machine. Just see, and anybody doesn't know, Brené Brown is, this is a standing joke because she like talks about her feelings. I don't think there's a
I actually have read, I'm trying to think what book it is. Something about being vulnerable. And that was, hey, if you're not vulnerable.
I can't be vulnerable in pinball. I'm trying to defend. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Keep
okay. And the final question, which is actually a legitimate question.
Okay. All right.
What would you like to see happen in the hobby in the next 3 to 5 years?
Ooh. I would like it to solidify a little bit. What I'd really like to see is some of these other companies step up and become more of a, I don't want to say a legitimate competition with Stern, but to be closer to Stern's production and their level.
Yeah.
The challenge is I fear that the market is kind of saturated right now. And I'm concerned that we went through this crazy nostalgia period over 14 years from 2010 to 2014. And I wonder if we're set up for a little bit of a drop off.
I think we are.
So I think we are. We're getting there where it was artificially boosted by the pandemic, where it went kind of crazy and the prices went up. And sadly, I've said that I think that really hurt JJP because they jumped their prices up so fast, so much that unless you're a hardcore fan of a JJP game, you're not going to buy it new. Like I would buy an Elton John for $8,500, $9,000, you know, kind of in the Sturm premium range.
Yeah,
I would buy that, but I'm not going to buy it for $12,500. I think there, so what I would hope for would be more of a solidification of CGC stepping up their production, Jersey Jack finding a more accessible price point for everybody, and people producing games that are similar to Stern quality and reliability. So I don't feel pigeonholed to avoid certain manufacturers because of their reliability issues. That's what I wish. I think what's going to happen is we're going to have a cooling down effect. There's going to be a few companies that are going to disappear. And you're going to see it cool off to probably more what it was pre-pandemic, where you're going to have a lot of machines for used machines that you can buy and sell for around $4,500, $5,000. And I wonder how that's going to affect. I think it's going to cool down the manufacturing because if people can't buy machines and artificially flip them for what they paid for them, then you're going to see people cooling down and looking at used games more than they are new.
Yeah. My hope is, I guess I've been kind of paralleling what's going on right now with the 90s. And I don't think it's as dramatic. And the reason I say that is because in the 90s, we had Gottlieb, Bally Williams, Data East, and like Capcom.
We were slaves to arcades, really.
Yeah.
Like we were totally dependent on what was on location.
Yeah.
So when the arcade died, pinball was on life support.
Yes. I just want to see, like, same with you, solidification. I want to make sure that, like, pinball can weather what we're going, because right. There's going to be a decline. There's just, it's not pinball's fault. It's the fact that the economy's rough. I mean, we're not going to go political or anything here, but it's just, you can see the trends in people's wallets are very much strained, and they'd rather buy food than a pinball machine. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Or pay bills, which I don't blame.
Taking my kids out to fast food, it's $60 to $70 for a family of five. It is. And that's not political. That's economic. And that's what pinball is economic.
Yeah. And usually when times are tough and economically, the first thing to go are luxury the pinball items. Machines, the jet skis, the Rolexes, you know what I'm saying? Like it's economy 101.
Yeah.
I see pinball in a really good spot right now, to weather the storm. I do see numbers are going to deflate. But other than that, I just think overall it's going to, I hope for it to just, the quality of games that are being built right now still happen. I feel like we're in a really good spot where the games really, when we first started doing Loser Kid, this was 5 years ago, Iron Maiden, I don't think had been released yet, or maybe it had been released.
What were the games that were hot then?
But think of before Iron Maiden, we had Deadpool, but if you weren't around when Deadpool was released, and maybe that actually came out after Iron Maiden,
it did not Deadpool do super well.
No, it didn't. But really, I was more of like, well, why buy a Stern for even a used price was about $4,500 at the cheapest. Mm-hmm. Granted, pros at that point were high fives, brand new in box. When I can get a Bally Williams for $2,000, and this is a 90s Johnny Mnemonic, Judge mm-hmm. Dredd, Fishtails, you know, it wasn't Whitewater Monster, or not Monster Bash, Medieval Madness, Attack from Mars. Mm-hmm. Whitewaters were still lower, but
they were still accessible.
Yes, they were still accessible. My point being is I just feel like Stern games, since the release of L1 games, have elevated, mm-hmm. and I would prefer to own a modern game than I would a Bally Williams.
Yes.
I would rather spend $9,500 or it was less than that for Godzilla Premium for me. But I would rather spend that much money than on a Medieval Madness. And don't get me wrong, I love Medieval Madness. It's a great game.
Yeah, but getting into a little bit like owning a, you know, people talk about, I'd love to have a Donkey Kong machine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, actually, you don't. And I'll tell you why. Because what happens is it's great eye candy and it looks cool. And you play it and you realize that this game was meant to be fun for 90 seconds.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be fun for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I still like the 90s games, the remakes. I like them and they're fun because my kids still like playing them, but it is not the same depth of rules that a Godzilla has, that a Rush has, you know, everything that Raymond put into the rules. I'm still finding new things in the rule sets. I'm even messaging Raymond saying, okay, explain this to me. I'm not figuring this out. And it's like, oh, you do that instead of that. Oh, okay. But that's not the level in Medieval Madness. The Medieval Madness is shoot the ramp.
Yeah.
Now that's it.
Well, and that's the thing too, is I feel like we really live in a cool day and age. Like I know we've talked about Venom hasn't done great in numbers, and I do feel bad because I feel like Eddie's a great designer and these games are pretty awesome. And
took a risk, honestly,
if Venom had released 10 years ago,
huge,
I think it would have been gangbusters.
However, I still think it's gonna do it. You're gonna see like pre-Venom and post-Venom because they're trying different things with Insider Connected.
Yes, but my point being is from 2000 Stern like literally year 2000 mm-hmm. to maybe 2016.
Yeah.
I could probably count on one hand the games that people just absolutely love from Stern. You've got Lord of the Rings.
2016?
Probably about, or yeah, 2016.
So 2000 to 2016.
Yes.
Well, I could count a lot. I would say to 2000 to 2010. You're talking like Tron, like pre-Tron. There's like
four it was games. Tron, Lord of the Rings, and Simpsons Pinball Party. Probably okay.
There yeah, might. But if you go after that, I mean, you got a lot of good
AC/DC,
ones.
AC/DC,
Metallica.
I'm saying they're good though, but there was nothing like. Okay, those two are great.
It's not the same level of you have Walking Dead in there. It's not the same level of code though that they have now. Is that what you're
That's what I'm trying to say. Okay. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say like every game that comes out now, I can be like, yeah, I could see owning that game
for a long time.
Yeah, but there's so much variety. It's like, well, why would I own a Venom when Jaws just came out? Or you know what I'm saying? Like I can wait till the next one. It just feels like pinball has really become like, oh, all the games are great. Mm-hmm. Where it used to be like, oh, Austin Powers.
Yay. Yeah.
Cool. Oh, Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Mm-hmm. I still wish Shrek were a good game. I own Shrek and I could not get rid of that fast enough. It was just not fun.
It's a decent game.
No, it's not.
But it's one of those games that
it's a great theme. It's a great theme.
My cousin who lives in town owns that game and I didn't read the rule set and I beat the game on my first try. And I was like, oh, that was kind of easy.
That was a game. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a game that exists. Mm-hmm. But okay. We're at an hour and a half.
All right. Yeah.
Did we cover what was the last one? It wasn't Brené Brown.
No.
Oh yeah. We're pinballs.
Yeah. Yeah. We got it. We got it. Where we think
we're good.
I would say we're cautiously, well, we're optimistic. We think it's actually going for a downturn, but we hope for better.
Yeah. I hope for it won't crash like it did in the 90s, but I agree with you. We were dependent on arcades. Now we're dependent on home. I think financially, even if we're in an economic depression like we are right now, financially we are better off now than we were in the 90s.
Yes.
I think people have more disposable income now than they did then. I could be wrong. And maybe, anyhow, that was my point. So, cross fingers. So we're saying John Wick here next week.
Yeah. And I think that John Wick will be it. Okay. It's going to be a theme that people are going to be excited about.
So it's either John Wick. Okay. Here's my prediction. It's John Wick. I find this interesting though. So John Wick, or we have heard, and this has been said on another podcast, so I don't feel like I'm revealing any information, but a remake is being made this year. It's going to be the very first Spike 3 game is what we're hearing. And the remake is a reimagined version of Metallica is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. And that's been the rumor for a long time.
Correct. But I find interesting.
Yeah.
Is John Wick's next? Supposedly John Borg's doing it.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, do you really think they would release John Wick and Metallica? They'd replace. I know it has nothing to do, like designer really doesn't define theme.
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I wouldn't overthink that.
I probably wouldn't either. But I do find it interesting. I do find it interesting. Yeah. All John Borg's games are not in production right now.
Everything
that's at Stern,
which
Ninja
is
Turtles has been discontinued. Rush has been discontinued.
Yep. I'm still surprised that Rush was discontinued when it did, because there was still demand for it.
Yes. It's really weird. It won Game of the Year.
Yeah.
And then they're like,
and it was already canceled. I think when it won Game of the Year.
Yeah. Yep. Sorry. I got to pull this up really quick. I'm just really quickly. I'm pulling up John Borg. So Rush was his last one. It's really weird to think too. Rush was in 2022 and it was the beginning of 2022.
Yeah.
Like I remember, we had Ed Robertson on, cause he worked with that from Bare Naked Ladies. And it was like end of January, beginning of February, I think is when we had him on.
Yeah. I think people are still waiting on their expression lighting kits.
So Rush, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
mm-hmm.
Munsters, which is the year that I remember literally when Munsters came out. That was the first episode we ever recorded Loser Kid. Mm-hmm. I was talking about Munsters. Before that, Guardians of the Galaxy. Are they still making Guardians? No. I swore they did a final call.
They were like joking. I think they ran like one other one.
Okay. So that's probably canceled as well. Aerosmith hasn't been made for years. Kiss hasn't been made for years. Walking Dead hasn't been made for years. I mean, seriously, we're back to Tron and Metallica days. This is more than a decade ago.
Yeah,
there is literally no John Borg game being built right now. So I don't think it'd be a shocker if
they did
release John Wick and Metallica. And
I'm still holding out hope for a vault edition of Lord of the Rings. It would sell 5,000.
So buy Metallica and show your support for Metallica. Maybe I bet this is a test run to say, are these viable?
I've actually never owned a Metallica, but I would be interested in a Metallica. Yeah.
So, all right, man. Hey. If you want to get a hold of us, we are loserkidpinballpodcast@gmail.com. We're on all the socials. I've been linking in the show description. You just click on that. It'll take you all of our socials, Facebook, Instagram, X, now Threads. We're all at Loser Kid Pinball. If you want some sweet swag, hit us, Loser Kid Pinball Podcast. No, sorry. Silverball Swag /Loser Kid Pinball. And check it out. Neil Shelton now owns the place. So thanks, Will, for, leaving the impression.
For your support, absolutely.
Yeah, man. And helping us all these podcasters. And thanks, Neil, for picking up that torch. What else? I think that does it. Give us our last word, Scott.
Okay. Bruce, go give Ron a big hug.